David, thank you for that very kind introduction. I also thought there would be seven people here tonight. So one, two, three, my parents, and David and Amelia. So I've got butterflies, but that's okay. Good evening, everyone. Thank you. It's an honor to be here tonight. But more than that, it feels, there's this combination, it feels wistful and hopeful all at the same time. As David mentioned, this series was supposed to take place in 2020, and right up until the world seemed to stop turning, who thought that that series wouldn't take place? I know that I felt whiplash at how quickly life changed in 2020. I served wine at communion on March 8th. I ran a PTA meeting on March 10th. I volunteered at the kids' school on March 12th, and then March 13th, they came home and they didn't go back from their school to their schools for a whole year. So it was quite a turn of events. And when Amelia asked me to participate in this series, she sent me the St. Mary's Annunciation from March 1st of 2020 so that I might be able to sort of revisit the description of the series as it was conceived in 2020. And so in doing that, I couldn't help but reflect on all that we've been through and all that we've collectively lost. And yet I also feel like right now we're on the cusp of something hopeful, dare I say, normal. There's hope, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and there's maybe a return to life almost as we knew it before the pandemic. So as I said, I'm feeling wistful and hopeful, somber and joyful. In grief work, we call this living in the and. It's an in-between place, a limbo that can feel overwhelming and jarring and uncomfortable. And I'll get back to that. My task tonight is to reflect on an aspect of Jesus's life, that of a healer, and discuss how I have been called to heal in my own life. To be honest, I said yes to this request on the spot. I tend to do that, much to my husband's dismay, because then he hears about it over and over again. As often happens, I grew sort of more terrified and overwhelmed every time I thought about what I was going to say tonight. And then when I looked at the original slate of speakers from 2020 and realized that they were all members of the clergy, I really began to wonder, why me? It feels very lofty, to be honest. I'm certainly no expert on Jesus, and I certainly don't think of myself as a healer in my day-to-day life. And you have to keep in mind that I have a father who's a surgeon, a brother who's a surgeon, a sister who's a surgeon, and a mother who's a nurse. So over and over the last few weeks I've been saying, they're the healers, not me. But I'm gonna take a go at this, and I hope I can shed a little light on what healing looks like as it relates to what I do in grief counseling, and you know, at the same time not prove to be a complete biblical dunce. So I wanted to give a little background about where I work and what I do. Full Circle Grief Center, as David said, is located in an unassuming brick building on Patterson Avenue at the intersection of Pump Road. So it's very close to St. Mary's, just a few miles away, although you know, you all may not be familiar with it at all. It was founded in 2008 by Allison Drake, who at the time was a school counselor who felt that there just were not enough resources for grieving families here in Richmond. Today, we offer individual grief counseling to children and adults, and I'm a grief therapist who sees adult clients. And we also offer many free programs for our community. Chief among them are a support group for families to participate in together, a support group for suicide loss, a support group for overdose loss, and the program that I run, which is, as David said, for late-term pregnancy and infant loss. Okay, I'm going to jump back to Jesus. So, you know, when I think about healing, there are countless examples in the Bible of Jesus as a healer. Without even having to think about this, I know that was true. He heals the blind, he heals the deaf, the lame, the sick. This is just a brief verse from Mark 6, verses 53 through 56. When they had crossed over, they came to a land at Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, people at once recognized him and rushed about the whole region and began bringing the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak. And all who touched it were healed. So this is sort of the type of biblical passage that first jumped into my mind when I thought about Jesus as a healer. But when I think about grief and healing, you know, even though I wish that it were as simple as the touch of a hand, we all know that that's not true. And to be honest, even the word healing in grief work is very tricky. I'm really cautious about the way I use it. I don't ever want to use it too flippantly because when some hear the word heal, they hear fix or they hear forget or move on. But no one who's really seeking our services, you know, they're not seeking to do those things. A mother whose baby is suddenly and mysteriously born still at 37 weeks doesn't want to forget the life that she prayed for and that she grew and she nourished. She rather wants to remember all the kicks that she felt and all the plans that she made. She wants to continue to mother her baby even in death. Likewise, the father who visited his baby for months in the NICU and lovingly held her when the decision was made to take her off of life support doesn't want his pain to be fixed or to move on with his life. So I'm really careful, again, with the word heal. But I know that I've seen healing take place right before my eyes. So a mother, imagine a support group, a mother sitting in the support group weeping because she feels this persistent guilt that her baby didn't survive her pregnancy. She's insistent that she should have known that something was wrong, that she should have paid more attention to her body because there should have been clues. And after a moment of silence, another mother who's quietly crying says, "I know. I feel that way too sometimes." And they share a moment together of really true understanding and empathy. And there's healing there. The guilt doesn't magically disappear. You know, of course it doesn't. But those two women, they feel heard without judgment or without platitudes. And they've been able to share their darkest feelings out in the open, out in the light. And no one is judging them or telling them not to feel what they're feeling. When we think about grief, now, in this day and age, we think about it differently than we once did. Yes, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief, they hold some intrinsic value, but we know that grief is much messier than just a trek through five stages. And my job as a grief therapist is not to really clean up or fix this mess. It's not to heal a grieving individual such that they are cured of pain and suffering. My job is just to hold space for that person to talk about and to process the many emotions that they're feeling. It's to create a space where grieving parents can come together and share their stories and connect and cry and vent and lift each other up and mostly just realize that they're not alone. My job is to help them identify and celebrate meaningful connections to their loved ones. And eventually my job is to help them live in that place that I mentioned before, the and. It's to let them know that letting joy back into their life will never diminish the love and the sadness and the longing that they feel for their loved one. Of course, that will never go away. Poet Kevin Young wrote, this is from a poem called Redemption Song, "Grief might be easy if there wasn't still such beauty. It would be far simpler if the silver maple didn't thrust its leaves into flame, trusting that spring will find it again. All this might be easier if there wasn't a song still lifting us above it, if wind didn't trouble my mind like water." Healing, as I know it, is sitting with a grieving person as they explore these contradictions and letting them know that they're not crazy. It's letting them know that it's okay to feel pain or anger or relief or joy and that these emotions might change by the minute. And grief has no end. And this is reassuring to many grievers because it means that their profound grief is proof of their profound love. But grief does change. It moves. It can ebb and it can flow and it can come roaring back seemingly out of nowhere. But that doesn't mean that there isn't healing going on. On the death of his mother, the writer Saul Bellow said, "Losing a parent is something like driving through a plate glass window. You didn't know it was there until it shattered, and then for years to come, you're picking up the pieces down to the last glassy splinter." I love this quote, and I often talk about it with my clients because people can really connect with it. It's very apt. Sometimes you see those glassy splinters sort of out there, and you know they're coming. Maybe it's an anniversary or a birthday or a due date. And you can prepare yourself. It's painful, but you can prepare yourself. You steel yourself. But sometimes they're hidden, and you step on one out of nowhere, and the pain is sharp, and it's debilitating. Those wounds hurt, but they're not to be hidden. And this brings me back to what Jesus' life can teach us about healing. How is it has informed my work, facilitating healing and grief. Brother Jack Crowley of the Society of St. John the Evangelist writes, "Don't forget that Jesus was mortally wounded on the cross. When Jesus came back to see his apostles, Jesus didn't say to his apostles, 'Hey, look at this pristine body my dad got me.' No. Jesus showed us his wounds. He showed his wounds as if to say, 'I'm the real deal. I've been to hell and back, and I've got the scars to prove it.'" And Mr. Crowley continues, "Healing is a process we've all been through. Healing centers ourselves and gives us a reason to get out of bed in the morning. Healing answers those big questions we have had in our head by making us find God where we need him most, which isn't always where we want him most." Jesus didn't hide his own suffering. Rather, he bore his wounds as reminders that healing is possible even when we have scars that will never fully disappear. Through my work, I want those who are suffering to know that they are seen, that their pain is seen, and it's messy, and it's awful, but they're not alone in it. I truly believe in the words that David wrote in a recent Lenten reflection. God made us to be with each other. In fact, it looks like we can't be fully human without each other. God's intention is for us to be a people who belong to each other and to God. There is no I or me without there also being an us and a we. This idea of belonging to one another is really what my faith is centered around. And I find that through this grief work, and though it can be really difficult at times, my faith is affirmed over and over again. So back in 2020, when the pandemic started, our offices closed very abruptly, just like many businesses around us. But we were pretty sure immediately that we had to figure something out, because we knew that now more than ever, people needed to know that they were not alone in their grief. And throughout the last 2 years, calls have come into our center seeking support services. Every month, we set a higher call record than the last. So social isolation for many has made their grief worse. But back then, I had really serious doubts about my ability to continue this work. Just the concept of meeting with a client via telehealth or leading a support group on Zoom was truly foreign and terrifying to me. We took a room in our house that was meant for art supplies and wrapping paper, and we turned it into a really teeny office for me. We bought a do not disturb sign that I could hang when, and my kids would know that they couldn't come in and ask for a snack or ask for help with homework or schoolwork, which they were doing right downstairs. But troubleshooting technical difficulties with my clients as we kind of struggled with each other to figure out telehealth was deeply frustrating and comical and humbling. Doing support groups in the evenings and having 12 faces staring back at me through the computer screen with 12 little red mute buttons on, and I was just pleading with them and through my eyes, like, please, somebody talk. That will haunt me forever, I think. It has not been easy, and I often feel several zip codes outside of my comfort zone. But those connections that we made sitting in a room together, we were able to make through the computer. Healing was still taking place, and I know that being able to do this work, realizing that I could do something, even in a time of fear and suffering, has been really healing for me as well. Thankfully, we are back in person at Full Circle, and it's been a joyful homecoming. We still offer counseling services. I don't think we'll ever stop offering telehealth, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think for some people it's worked well. But being able to sit across from a client or to convene a group of grieving parents in our group space has really filled me with a renewed sense of purpose and gratitude. Here's another brother from the Society of St. John the Evangelist, David Vryhoff. He writes, "We are the channels of God's love and healing in the world, fostering forgiveness and reconciliation, bringing healing and blessing to the lives of those that we meet. God's work is healing work, bringing health and wholeness to human lives, physically, emotionally, spiritually. We ourselves have been healed by love, and we are to be agents of that same healing and love to others. And I hope that in my small corner of the world, I can be an agent of healing and of love for my clients. The last thing I wanted to share with you guys tonight is a visual example of the work that I do, because sometimes words, you know, no words can really bring to life understanding the way a picture can. And, you know, I want my clients to know that grief work always, you know, it extends beyond just talking. So we use a lot of art in our work, and it helps clients to know that healing can take place even when words fail. Talking about grief over and over again for some can be really tiresome and tedious, and it becomes unhelpful. So creating art can feel like doing something, and in that it can bring about healing, and the same goes for exercise and gardening and building something and volunteering. There's all kinds of ways to bring about healing. And we really try and explore those. But so this is a collaborative art project that our fall group that just met in the fall of 2021 made together. The idea behind the bowl is taken from the Japanese art of kintsugi, which is the art of repairing broken pottery with gold or silver lacquer. The philosophy behind it is something like, you know, everything has value, even something that's been broken. And sometimes there's beauty in the cracks that are left behind. So what we do is, you know, we start with a white, solid white bowl, and we shatter it. And every group participant gets a fragment of the bowl. And on the outside, they usually paint or draw something that they want the world to know about them. But then on the inside, they write or draw something that, you know, they want to sort of keep inside or that they have been keeping inside. So it can be, you know, their baby's initials. Sometimes it's a symbol that's become meaningful for them in grief. Sometimes it's just whatever kind of hits them on the spot. But then we reconstruct the bowl at the end, and we paint the seams with a gold paint pen. And obviously that, you know, what is left behind, I mean, or what we started with is very different than what we're left with, but it's still beautiful, and it's still filled with love. So I just brought this tonight because I think it's a good sort of example of kind of the kind of healing and what healing looks like in grief. And I'll just leave you tonight with a quote from songwriter Leonard Cohen that always kind of comes into my mind when we do a project like this. Ring the bells that can still ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I'm sure it was a little faster than maybe you anticipated, but does anyone have any questions for me?
Are you all open for new patients?
Yes. I mean, we do have a waiting list right now, but it's pretty fast, and faster than, I mean, unfortunately, most counseling agencies have waiting lists because there's just been such a need during the pandemic. So we are, you know, constantly bringing in new therapists, opening up more hours. So, yes, we do take clients.
I have a friend dramatically over the sudden loss of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to perhaps talk to her about your class and Do you have a business card?
Yeah, I'll leave one tonight. Sure. Yes, I didn't mention everything. So we also have some online groups that meet like monthly. They're very easy to access, and it can be for any type of loss. So I know I mentioned very specific types of loss, but we do more general work as well. So yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, sure.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. First of all, I don't know that I could say no to Amelia. I really don't. But but I also really do love talking about our work because I was working at a hospital when I came to Full Circle and sort of met the director just at a school function, and she was describing to me their services, and I didn't think we had anything like this, and I was so blown away because I knew so many families and through the hospital that could benefit. So I just started leading groups for them in the evenings and really felt like it was my home. And so as soon as there was an opening to come on the staff, I jumped at the chance, and I've been there 5 years now. It's been great.
What kind of immediate counseling is available to families in the hospital, like in the NICU or in the L&D?
So I worked at Henrico Doctors. And I can speak to Henrico Doctors that there are social workers, counselors there who can help. They're very busy, and so a lot of times they are doing work that's not as much about counseling, as much more about discharge planning or trying to get folks, you know, into facilities, that kind of thing. But they are there. It's not, you know, we could come further in that, and we could do better. VCU, I think, has a broader staff just because they have a school of social work, and so there's more bodies down there, and there are more people who are available to help. I know there's also pastoral care, and I don't mean to gloss over that. But again, when I was at Henrico Doctors, even the pastoral care was pretty thin, and they traveled between campuses, so it was, you know, it's hard to find. And sometimes, you know, these families, and sometimes, especially the families that I see who've had a traumatic pregnancy loss are not quite ready when they're in the hospital, and so it is kind of nice to have a center kind of outside of what they went through in the hospital. So, you know, families will call me 6 weeks, a few months later and say, like, I'm ready, I wasn't ready, but now I'm ready to get some help.
Mm-hmm. I'm very taken by the fact that you were referring to Jesus, who was a carpenter, and your name Zimmerman is carpenter.
That's right.
In German.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You are a good carpenter.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And my new name, Schaefer, not so new anymore, is shepherd in German. So I also feel like a shepherd sometimes. So, yes.
So I find myself going back to the group where the two women, where something happened.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I was thinking about when I went through CPE and seminary, which is, you know, you just go work in a hospital for the summer. And, you know, I'll just speak on my behalf, began to ape some of the professional language, doctors, nurses, caregivers. And my supervisor at a one-on-one said, in this place, these people don't need one more expert. What they need is a human being. Mm. Can you do that? So there are people with skills like you and your family. And sometimes what people, and I'm just kind of, sometimes what people need is a human being. That's where healing comes. You know, I think we think of Jesus as, you know, it's miraculous. Yes, but that may be nearer to you, that the miraculous working through your humanity may be closer than you think. So So I am grateful for people like you who can stand in the dark place and have skills with others. And I just was so moved by what you saw, which is when they went, oh, I'm not alone.
Right.
And what that can do.
Yes. I think that that is by far the most important thing to come out of seeking out support, is to know, you know, you're not... grief is a lonely process, and I don't mean to say that, you know, no one's alone when they're grieving, but to have, to be able to connect with someone, even if it's just in a moment, who says, I know what you're going through, I think is really powerful.
Somebody really knows, rather than somebody who just says it.
Right, right.
Because you can kind of tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can.
Question. What role do you see, or place do you see, and do you see a difference in people with strong faith and their ability to move through or work with their grief versus people who really don't have that kind of faith? Do you see any?
Yeah, I mean, we see. I think faith is really important, and I think some people are able to, you know, as Bob would have said, if he were, he's not here, lean into their faith, you know, and find that a lot of people do. But then it's a spectrum, and we have people who come in very angry at God too, and very. Especially when something has kind of happened that is out of the natural order that they weren't expecting, that seems very unfair. So I do think faith is really important, and I am always willing to go there. It's not always comfortable, and since I'm not a member of the clergy, sometimes it's hard for me to talk about my own faith, but I want to go there with clients who... feel like they need to talk about their faith, but you know, we see a lot of a whole spectrum.
We have a couple more minutes before we say our prayers. Any other questions or observations or thoughts?
Who raised you?
Thanks. Thank you.